We are back with another episode of the Bills Wire podcast brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group. I'm your host, Rob Quinn. I'm the managing editor of BillsWire.com. You can find me on Twitter at RobQuinn619. As always, I'm here with my co-host, Kyle Salagi. Kyle, where can they find you and how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. People can find me on Twitter at Kyle Salagi. And I'm excited to preview this Dolphins game and then answer some questions.
Yeah, we got a boatload of questions in minutes from Bills Wire readers wanting to know what's going on with the team, not only this weekend, but going forward into the offseason. You know, it's rapidly approaching. But it's been a bit of a hiatus since our last podcast. So just we'll do a quick recap of the Colts. I know everyone saw that, the epic snow game and the blizzard. But how cool was that to watch, Kyle?
I was tweeting throughout the entire game, just like, this is incredible. If the Bills ever consider building a dome stadium, I'll never forgive Terry Pegula. But then it all kind of settled down, and then I looked outside, and I realized, oh no, I can just look outside if I want to see snow. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to have to go and shovel all this afterwards. So that wasn't fun. But yeah, it was a fun game to watch, but unfortunately, everything in the game really has to be taken with a grain of salt just because of the conditions. And the whole quarterback situation for the Bills. I mean, it wasn't a game that you're going to look back on and be like, oh, that was a great football game, but it's a victory, and it helped keep the playoff hopes alive.
Absolutely, and like you said, I mean, you can't take a lot away from it. Lorenzo Alexander earlier in the week said it was like a glorified walkthrough. He said, looking at the scoreboard, the fastest speed recorded was 14 miles an hour. And usually he said it's about around 22 miles an hour that players are moving at. So he said that the snow is just really slowing it down. And we saw that. And LeSean McCoy was really the only person that wasn't slowed down. He ran for 156 yards, that incredible 21-yard game-winning touchdown in the overtime to seal the deal. And that was that. Nathan Peterman suffered a concussion while Tyrod Taylor was out with a knee injury, meaning that Joe Webb had to handle the duties under center, which was very fun to watch in those conditions with those wide receivers after Kelvin Benjamin went out. So I don't think there was really much more that you can ask for in a game like that, especially when writers like us were watching HD and you just see complete white for the first hour, and we got to write a story about that.
Exactly.
So.
And I mean, one takeaway from that game is that Joe Webb is the best snow quarterback in the league. So I think we should keep him around for the foreseeable future just in case, you know, another snow situation does come up.
Joe Webb is undefeated in the snow this year. That is correct. He is the number one. If you look on Pro Football Focus, he has the best stats under pressure, with a clean pocket, throwing deep balls with the snow like that. So he might be an answer going forward. But in all seriousness, let's look ahead to Sunday, because this is a big, big game. And for people our age, we really haven't seen a game of this magnitude in December in a while. I mean, it was 1999 the last time they made the playoffs, as we all know. But 2004 was really the last meaningful game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Came out against their backups and lost. And this is a game that I think is a make or break for the Bills season.
It's
what do you think about this weekend,
make
Kyle?
Or break game, as you said. And it's just weird because there's not a whole lot of hype surrounding this game. It's strange because we're currently in a playoff spot and it's December 15th. And so it's just weird that, you know, it's essentially a game to keep our playoff hopes alive. And we're just like, it's just another game. And it's very strange, but yeah, I'm glad that it is December 15th and we're still in the playoff discussion. And if we win out, there's a strong possibility that we will make the playoffs. And I think that's a big reason why there's not a lot of hype surrounding it. Just looking at the schedule, it's going to be tough to win the final three games. But, you know, anything can happen. And just got to focus on this game for now.
Yeah, you brought up a great point that people are just really, it's a meaningful game in December that we just haven't seen in 17 years. But I think that speaks to the culture that Sean McDermott's building. The players aren't getting too high. They're not getting too low, except for Tre'Davious White bouncing from end zone to end zone last week in the snow. Other than him, I mean, everyone's keeping a level head and, you know, focused on the task at hand. We saw Miami crush the New England Patriots on Monday Night Football. Does that give you concern going into Sunday's game?
Because we struggled against New England, and they just come out and they played well against them. But I'd like to think that that was just a New England off day combined with a Miami good day, and that's just, you know, circumstances created that. But we'll have to wait and see, and just, you know, hope that Miami will come out here and just play like they have all season, really, or except for that last game, and just lose.
That was an interesting game to watch. From the beginning, Tom Brady did not look like Tom Brady. He threw an interception on the opening drive, I believe, and Miami just ran away with the game. They controlled the line of scrimmage with Ndamukong Suh and Jordan Phillips, who's an up-and-coming star at defensive tackle. Cameron Wake's almost as old as Lorenzo Alexander, still making an impact off the edge. And, you know, Xavier Howard kind of burst onto the scene. I thought he was completely terrible until the last 2 weeks, going back to studying wide receivers and his time at Baylor. But he had a beautiful interception on Brandon Cooks, and Jay Cutler was firing on all cylinders. The defensive line was pressuring Brady. As we know, that's the way to really shock the Patriots, if not beat them, is to put a hurting on Brady, and that's exactly what Miami did.
Yeah, exactly. And you just brought up Cameron Wake. I was amazed when I was looking up stats before this. He has 8 sacks this year, and he's, as you said, he's fairly old, which is incredible. I did not think he had 8 sacks this year.
Yeah, he's quietly been one of the best defensive ends in the NFL for just several years now, making Pro Bowls, and just not really getting the recognition he deserves. But he always seems to have a day against the Bills, and he'll be a player that you need to keep an eye on, especially against Jordan Mills. And then you look at Ndamukong Suh against Eric Wood and Vlad Dukas, and that's kind of scary to think about. And then you have Jordan Phillips, who's not only 330 pounds and 6'6", but a freak of an athlete who's going to be going against Richie Incognito for the majority of the game, who's been pretty hit or miss. I mean, he's had his huge splash plays that have sprung LeSean McCoy for a ton of those big runs that he's had, but I think that those penalties are going to catch up to him because Phillips just has an incredible burst off the line. His hands are violent, and that's going to be a fun matchup to watch in the trenches. And last but not least, I'm excited to see how Deion Dawkins does at left tackle again now that Cordy Glenn's been placed on injured reserve.
Yeah, and this is really a big – how many games are left? 3 games? It's a big 3-game stretch for Dawkins just because he's been, you know, solid in Glenn's absence all year, but now he knows he's the guy for the rest of the year. He's the starter. You know, there's not Cordy Glenn over there on the sidelines thinking, oh, if he comes back next week, I'm on the bench again. That's my job. So Dawkins now knows that for at least the next 3 weeks, he is the starting guy at left tackle. So, you know, maybe he'll play with a new confidence and just come out there and start mauling guys and show that Glenn truly is expendable this offseason.
You already know, that, as Deion Dawkins would say. I've been really impressed with him. I was not a fan of the draft pick, trading up for him, especially in the second round. But to get a player who started at right tackle, moved over to the left side, back to the right side, back to the left side, and had to go through that adversity as a rookie, I mean, he's performed as well as you can ask. And I don't think that he's really been a liability on the line at all, outside of a handful of plays maybe against the Chargers, but they have two of the best edge defenders in the NFL. So I've been really encouraged from what I've seen from Dawkins, but are you worried about the Dolphins being able to get that type of pressure on Taylor that they were
I'm a bit
on
concerned
Brady?
just because there have been a few games this year where the offensive line has been trash, and just Tyrod barely has a pocket, and the Dolphins do have a very talented defensive line. So, and this is Tyrod's first game back, so I'm just talking about it and I'm making myself more worried as I'm just listing stuff. So, yeah, I'm worried now. I
You always
always
get
get
worried
worried
when
just
I
because
bring
I
up the
don't do
opposing
much
team.
research, and then you're just listing stuff, and I'm like, oh God, oh no. But yeah, I mean, I could see the offensive line struggling again against this talented Dolphins D line.
See, the thing that I saw, they were blitzing a lot up the middle, and we see Tyrod make incredible plays to escape the pocket with those spin moves and get away from those, roll out, keep his eyes downfield, and move the chains or connect for a touchdown. So I think it's going to be something to watch if the Dolphins want to kind of keep him in the pocket, as a lot of teams have tried to do against Tyrod this year, or if they're going to just stick to that game plan that worked against the Patriots and just go all out up the middle and make Tyrod
Yeah,
beat them deep.
that'll definitely be an interesting point to watch because, as you said, Tyrod is known for making or for extending plays with his legs, and just that whole storyline with his leg. Just is he going to be able to do that this week? Because we saw against the Patriots, he injured his leg. I think it was on the first play of the game. He got sacked and he just landed awkwardly on it, and then played throughout the entire game. But then or he wasn't that great against the Patriots. I think he was like 9 for 18. Didn't play all that well, but he was mobile, which was incredible, especially playing on an injured leg. And then he couldn't play last week, and now he's back, so it'll just be interesting to see, does he still have that mobility coming back from the injury?
Definitely. And I think that speaks to his toughness, his competitiveness, knowing that at any given moment, Nathan Peterman can be put in to replace him. I know Peterman is still in the concussion protocol. He's been ruled out, so he may not be looking over his shoulder this week for Joe Webb to come in. But, I mean, going forward, that's something to watch. I think Taylor knows what's at stake. And he has 3 games to put on the best tape that he has for the rest of the NFL, because he's not going to be a Buffalo Bill after week 17 unless they make the playoffs. And I still don't see him being a part of the team after,
Yeah,
which
you're
is kind
absolutely
of
right. And
absurd.
you said Tyrod doesn't have to look over his shoulder this week. Well, if it starts snowing, then yes, he does. He has to look for Joe Webb, who's the best snow quarterback in the league. But yeah, unless it starts snowing, Tyrod is gonna, play throughout the entirety of this game, unless he gets injured, of course. And I do think he's gonna be the starter for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's something that I've gone back and forth with myself about, because you see McDermott, and he always adds that caveat, when healthy, Tyrod is our starter. I think the writing's on the wall that he's gone. They want to see what Peterman can do, but the first time you give him a start, he throws 5 interceptions in the first half, so there's not much to evaluate there. Then you put him in last week in a blizzard, and then he gets concussed, so there's not much to evaluate there. So if he does clear the concussion protocol by next week, that'll be something to watch, especially with the Bills. If they come away with a win and they're still alive in the playoffs, will Sean McDermott make another one of those strange decisions that shocks everybody and decides to roll with Peterman? But we'll wait until next week to discuss
Yeah,
that
if we beat the
nightmare
Dolphins
scenario.
and then
But
McDermott announces that we are starting Peterman against the Patriots, I will do my own podcast where I just scream into a microphone for 30 minutes. Who?
Well, you know who else was a day three pick?
Oh, was he?
Tom Brady.
Wow, that's
You
incredible.
can find
That's
him
a
anywhere, guys.
parallel right there.
But so offensively, obviously Tyrod, we talked about that, Nathan Peterman, the offensive line, but if it snows as anticipated, LeSean McCoy is going to once again be called upon to carry the load. His two best games of his career, coincidentally, have come in these just day after tomorrow like weather conditions. I think he had 217 yards and two scores when he was with the Eagles against the Vikings playing Joe Webb's team. And then he had 156 and a score last week. And he was talking about it after the game, saying, you know what? It's not any different. Just my cuts are the same and yada, yada, yada. I'm still LeSean McCoy. I'm going to do my thing. Against the Dolphins, the Patriots aren't a team that's going to run the ball, but they found a way to get them out, their linebackers out in space in the passing game. And that's going to be something that the Bills absolutely have to do.
Is get their. Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Get.
Yeah, they're going to have to get McCoy in space and feed him the ball, not only as a running back, but as a pass catcher out of the backfield. And, you know, let him use his elusiveness and kind of create yards after the catch and move the chains if the weather is
Yeah,
adverse,
most
as it was
definitely.
last week.
McCoy. I don't think it's actually supposed to snow that badly this weekend. I think it's just going to be cold. But LeSean McCoy is still an incredible running back. I think it's crazy that I'm like, oh, it's not going to snow, so McCoy's not going to be great. But just get McCoy the ball any way you can, really. Especially just with the poor production out of the receivers this season. Just get McCoy the ball any way you can.
Yeah, definitely. And before we move to the defensive side of the ball, talk about the receivers a little bit. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin, he's had horrific knee injuries, I mean, seemingly every time he steps on the field, and he keeps coming back and making plays. That throw and catch from Peterman to him before they set up the touchdown that was his first score as a member of the Bills, that was incredible, and that's exactly what the Bills thought when they would have when they traded for him. I think if the winds are swirling like they usually do at New Era Field this time of year, and if there is some snow, that KB is going to be a guy that Tyrod has to trust. And we really haven't seen Tyrod make those 50-50 throws. And Peterman, of course, he only had two opportunities to do that, but he was on time, on the sideline, dropped it right where it needed to be. And in two plays, there are 7 points on the board. So that'll be something to watch. Zay Jones, again, moving from the outside to the slot. That'll be another interesting thing to watch. But I really want to see the tight ends get involved more. They were at the beginning of the season, and they've kind of just faded away. Charles Clay seems to get hurt or banged up or need to come off the field almost every time he makes a catch. So someone has to step up there and really threaten the Dolphins in the middle of the field, because they do have athletic linebackers. They do have an all-pro safety in Rashad Jones, and they're going to need to find a way to open things up for LeSean McCoy and kind of give some space to Kelvin Benjamin on the
Yeah, I
outside.
totally agree. I thought Benjamin was incredible last week, just in the snow. It was hilarious towards the beginning of the game when it was whiteout conditions. He's lining up 3 yards offsides and nobody cared. It was just hilarious to watch. But yeah, he had three catches, I think. And I think all the ca or no, there was like one that was on a slant, but like you said, the other two just going up and bringing the ball down, which is exactly why the Bills got him. Ideally, so Tyrod could make more of those 50-50 throws, but it was Peterman making the throws. He was great. Zay Jones wasn't targeted last week, which is a bit concerning, but then again, it was the snow, so I'm not gonna put too much stock into that. But yeah, it'll just be interesting to see how they attack this defense.
Yeah, definitely. And something that I'd really like to see that the Bills have kind of strayed away from is utilizing the tight end position. you have a guy like Kelvin Benjamin, 6'5", 6'6", 250 on the outside. Zay Jones, he's going to be running those decoy routes. LeSean McCoy, he's a threat out of the backfield. He has over 45 catches himself, and he's a threat as a runner. But I'd really like to see Charles Clay really step up and have a game, but it seems like every time that he makes a reception or a big-time first down, he's waving to Nick O'Leary to come on the field because he's banged up. And the Bills need to take advantage of this, and I think that in order for their offense to have any sort of success, they're going to need to move the ball efficiently, keep the chains moving, stay on schedule, don't get behind and down distance, and convert third downs. But that might be an issue against this Miami defense, who has only allowed one of their last 24 third down conversion attempts to be converted, I believe.
That is a scary stat. But I don't know if there's like a stat about this. I haven't done much research, but I feel like the Bills have been like fairly efficient on third down recently. And like you brought up Charles Clay, in the beginning of the season especially, it was like, this is the year, this is the Charles Clay that we signed a few years ago, this is why we gave him the mega contract. But then he got banged up versus Cincinnati, and he just has been ineffective since. And then Nick O'Leary looked solid for a while, but just recently there's been no production out of the tight end position, which has been a huge hit to the passing game. So, like you said, I mean, just using the tight ends in the intermediate passing game, that'll be big for picking up third downs against a defense that seemingly doesn't allow offenses to pick up on third down, pick up first downs on third down.
Yeah, I mean, Rick Dennison is going to have to stick to his game plan. I mean, he's drawn a lot of fire from the fan base and the media alike for his play calling, but you need to rely on LeSean McCoy. You need to get favorable down distance to put your pass catchers in a position where it's not third and eight and you're trying to throw a 6-yard pass and hopefully they could pick up the extra two. But moving to the defensive side of the ball, I want to look at Dolphins running back Kenyon Drake. Since they traded Jay Ajayi, which kind of took the NFL world by storm almost as much as the Sammy Watkins or Ronald Darby trade, he's been really impressive. I think that's 430 something yards, averaging almost 5 yards a carry, 2 scores. He catches the ball well out of the backfield, and on Monday we really saw his full skill set put to use because Damian Williams was inactive, and they use him in a variety of different ways, and he looks like he's capable of handling a workload. But do you think that he's a true number one running back, or do you think that he's just kind of a flash in the pan? What are your thoughts on Kenyon Drake?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we've seen enough out of him yet to say that he's a number one running back. But that doesn't take away from the fact that he's been really solid in recent weeks. Week 13 against Denver, 120 yards and a score. Then against New England, 114 yards, which is, that's, solid production out of a running back. So recently, I mean, it's a what have you done for me lately business. So, yeah, he's playing like a number one running back right now. I hope he doesn't play like a number one running back against the Bills, but am I ready to call him a number one back right now? Maybe if he finishes out the season, finishes out with 3 consecutive 100-plus yard games, I'll be like, yeah, definitely, that's the guy. But, he's looked solid. He's looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been a player that I was a fan of going back to Alabama. He was in a running back room that had Alvin Kamara, Derrick Henry, and TJ Yeldon at the same time. So he didn't really get to make a name for himself with the Crimson Tide. And behind Jay Ajayi, obviously you're not going to get that many opportunities. But since the trade, he's looked pretty solid to me. And the Bills have really struggled to defend the run. I mean, they're allowing over 120 yards a game on the ground. They collapsed since the fifth week of the season. They got Matt Milano finally starting. I think that's going to be a big help given his speed and his tackling ability. Not only against Kenny and Drake, but against the slot receiver Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills is an interesting player. He has 50 catches for 751 yards and six scores. He's a deep threat. I'm sorry, the fuck. Milano's going to be a big factor not only against Kenny and Drake, but against slot receiver Jarvis Landry. And Jarvis Landry is really interesting because he has 88 catches for 745 yards. And he's not going to get a ton of yards after the catch, but he's going to make those tough catches over the middle. And he has a really limited route tree, but he does not drop the ball. He moves the sticks, and he could be the X factor for the Dolphins. I mean, he's tough. He's physical. He's undersized, of course, but he's everything you look for in a slot receiver, except for the fact that maybe he can't create yards on his own after the ball is in his hands.
That'll be a good matchup to watch. But I have a question. Do you think Jay Cutler is going to be a Pro Bowl quarterback again this week, or do you think he's going to be Jay Cutler?
You know, Jay Cutler gets a lot of crap because, you know, the memes of him just smoking cigarettes on the sidelines and not caring at all. But he came to play on Monday, and I don't know if you saw that pass to Jakeem Grant. Jakeem Grant is 5'5", and he threw a back shoulder fade to him in the end zone that was just undefendable. And Cutler looked ready to play. They showed a lot of bootlegs and play action that and misdirection and everything that got Jay on the move and kind of made him look a little sneakily athletic, as many would like to say. But you have to wonder if that's Jay Cutler wanting to show out in primetime in beautiful weather in sunny Florida, or if that's just going to be something that falls apart when he comes to Buffalo in the cold and just doesn't care and is chiefing cigarettes on the sidelines like we've known him to see.
I hope that's the case, but... You know, Jay Cutler played in Chicago for how many years? So he's no stranger to cold. So it gets pretty cold in Chicago. So we'll see if the cold actually...
I don't think he has the weapons that he did in Chicago or Denver. Oh, he most definitely
does not. But,
or the coaching.
Very true.
The mentality. Back then, he was in his mid-20s. You think about it, in the offseason, he was working for Fox until... The Dolphins called him and said, "Hey, we'll give you $10 million to be our quarterback this year." Okay. So you got to wonder where his head is and if he's really ready to show up. I mean, if Jerry Hughes or Kyle Williams gets a few licks on him, which the Patriots really weren't able to do that often, how is he going to respond? And I don't think that Jay Cutler is the type of guy who is going to be able to bounce back from that. He's a talented quarterback. He's obviously got one of the biggest arms in the league, but he just looks so nonchalant when he's playing. I mean, someone makes a mistake, he claps his hands, and he walks to the sideline. I mean, maybe that's just his personal body language, but it seems like he's kind of just going through the motions out there. But on Monday, he just put on a show for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's very strange. I do hope that he just like you said, just put on a show in prime time, just decided to be pretty good, and he'll just return to average form this week. We will see about that.
Yep, and one more thing before we got our awesome readers sent a ton of questions for us to answer about the game. Kiko Alonso and LeSean McCoy meet again.
Ooh, totally forgot about that.
Yep. And Kiko has been pretty impressive. He's on the verge of another 100-tackle season. He's got 6 tackles for loss, a sack, almost decapitated Joe Flacco. So he's had a pretty good resume on this season so far. So, I mean, he's athletic. We all know that. He's playing the Will role, which is probably his best fit after playing Mike in Buffalo, which was what everyone was griping about before the trade. But LeSean McCoy is 39 yards away from his 10K chase. So this will be fun to watch, you know, a little trash talk by Shady, of course, like we always see. Maybe Kiko will get into it too with a little friendly banter, but that's something that I'll be watching.
Yeah, and we all like to clown on Kiko just because he's the reason we got McCoy. But he's a solid linebacker. You know, he was solid last year, and he's solid again this year. So I still think we won the trade, but that doesn't mean that... I mean, he's not even in Philly anymore, but Alonzo's still a fairly good linebacker.
Yeah, that's a great point. Bills fans love to just make them... myself included, make themselves feel like they won everything. And they got the Lamborghini and traded the broken down Honda in every trade or transaction that's ever happened. But that's enough for looking ahead to the Dolphins. Bills will squish the fish. We know this. So we'll turn to our loyal readers' questions. First of all, we have Bills on PFS spot. Kenyon Drake was on fire Monday night. Is he that good, or is the Patriots' defense without Andre Branch, Trey Flowers, and Kyle Van Noy that bad? Do you want to start, or would you like me?
I'll start quick. We kind of already touched on this earlier on in the episode. Just, Drake's looked solid, especially the past 2 weeks, like I said. It's probably a combination. He's probably very good, and the Patriots' defense was just a bit weaker. I think Drake's the real deal. I think he's going to be the real deal, at least.
All right. Jason Shannon says, do you think we're re-signing EJ Gaines or Jordan Matthews, or potentially both? Also, why does anyone live in Buffalo? Well, I think... we definitely re-signed EJ Gaines. They acquired him in the trade for Sammy Watkins. He's been nursing hamstring injuries on and off throughout the season, but when he's on the field, he's been almost as good as Tre'Davious White has, and he's clearly the second best corner on the roster, with Tre'Davious White being the only cornerback under contract next year. I think they have to re-sign him. Jordan Matthews will be interesting because he has the numbers with Philly to warrant somewhat of a Robert Woods-ish type deal. But with Buffalo, he didn't do much of anything, and his season was cut short, and he was put on IR. As for why does anyone live in Buffalo, it's... no. Great pizza.
Can't answer.
Wings. I'm from South Florida, so I can answer this. The pizza, the wings, the beer, the people, the nut jobs that went to the game last week, like our beloved Rich. And yeah. It's awesome.
I'll agree with you about EJ Gaines and Jordan Matthews. Like you said, Gaines has been solid when he's been healthy this year. So I don't see any reason why they would let him go. Whereas
you
Jordan,
don't agree with the wings.
I'll get to why people live in Buffalo, but, Jordan Matthews, again, that'll depend on how much money he's asking for. If he wants a big contract, I think that Bean might look at him and say, well, you simply didn't have that type of production here. We're going to look elsewhere, possibly try to get a receiver in the draft. For as why does anybody live in Buffalo? It's because it's a cool city. It's on the lake, so there's water that you can look at in the summer. I don't know. I have a lot of Buffalo pride just because I've grown up here, and especially now, just I mean, you hear it everywhere here that it's turning around, it's making a comeback. So, it's really nice. There's a lot of things to do. You just have to look for them sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. And if one more person asks me, why would you move from Florida to Buffalo? I will lose it because Buffalo is awesome. I love it. I love the people. I love the food. I love the architecture, everything to do here.
Yep.
I don't want to sit and sweat when I walk to get the newspaper. So that's why people live in Buffalo. Now, Schultzy 0620 says, if you were calling the shots in the draft room, would you try to trade up for a QB or stay and take the two best players available with our picks in the first round? Now, this is a topic that Kyle is writing about at the moment that should be up on Bills Wired probably tomorrow. To me, it's a debate given the lack of depth that the Bills will have on both sides of the ball. So obviously you want to find players to fill those holes. But at the end of the day, what is filling all those holes going to do unless you have that franchise quarterback? I know when they made all those trades in the offseason, they're like, oh yeah, they're tanking, they're going to have a high pick. Well, guess what? Now they don't. They have two picks in the 20s, and they're going to have to trade up if they want a franchise quarterback. I think we're going to see a Carson Wentz or Jared Goff like deal. The Bills just can't afford to just keep taking second or third rounders and try to sell them off like they're a franchise quarterback when they're really not. Because in my mind, there's Josh Rosen, there's Baker Mayfield, and there's Sam Darnold, and then the field. And that's a mix of whoever you want. We remember the 2013 draft with EJ Manuel and Ryan Nassib and all those guys grouped together. But this isn't that draft. I think there's two or three potential franchise quarterbacks, and the Bills, if they wanted to change their fortunes, they have to move up and get it and be aggressive for once. What do you think?
I agree with that. You can read my thoughts more in depth on this probably tomorrow, as Rob said, but my basic opinion is we have the assets this year to move up, so I think that McDermott and Bean need to identify the guy that they want, who they feel they can build around, and then give up what they need to give up to go up and get him. Whether that's Rosen, whether that's Darnold, or not sure how much they'd have to move up for Mayfield, but whether that's Mayfield, they do have to. I think that this is the year that they are best suited to move up, just because of all the draft picks they have. I think that they have the assets to move up and then, pick the guy that will hopefully lead the team into the future.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of that, if you look at the trades made last year when teams moved up for quarterbacks, they didn't really have to give up a ton. So it's not like the Bills are going to have to give up all five of those first picks in the first three rounds. They can still get talent. And the good thing about this draft is it's deep at the positions where the Bills are weak. They need linebacker help. It's loaded. They need defensive line help. It's loaded. They need complementary receivers. There's pick your poison or your favorite. They're there. They need a running back. There's probably 50 that can contribute. So I think the Bills are in a good position, but they must be aggressive with the quarterback position for once. So Aaron Quinn, I'm not sure. He sent this two different questions worded differently. He says, which Bills are playing for their jobs in the next three games? And he says, which players are most auditioned for a job next year? So I'm going to say that his first question was geared more towards who is playing for their jobs, as in to see an increased role, maybe. And the second one is auditioning to even remain on the team. So I'll start off with saying which Bills are playing for their jobs. I would say Matt Milano, obviously. I think he's all but secured that and proven that. And I know you guys hate me beating the Milano drum, but that kid can play. And he's the new age linebacker, converted safety, playing will. that can run and chase. He can cover the flat. He can cover the hook zones. He can play man coverage against tight ends. He can cover the flat and do everything you really need to cover the field. As far as a player that's auditioning for their job in the next three games, I would say Preston Brown. He's been really, really, really unimpressive to me this season. The Saints game was despicable. The fact that he did nothing when Gronkowski bodies whatever the hell he did to Tre'Davious White, he stood and watched. I don't know what he's doing. Sure, he has 100 tackles a year, but if you look at the rest of his stats, he makes zero impact plays. He has maybe two tackles for loss a year. He doesn't have any sacks, doesn't have any interceptions, except for that Dolphins game. He's just a player that's in the middle. And I think that he's needs to show out if he wants to remain with the Bills. One more, I'm going to say Deontay Thompson playing for his job. He's been balling out, but you know, with receivers, that's a tricky position. Everyone wants to always upgrade there. But I think that if he can play well these last three games, then he has a good shot to remain next year.
Yeah, I'd agree with those guys. I'll just throw in Deion Dawkins again. He kind of fits in for both. You know, he's not going to lose his job, obviously. They're not cutting him. But just, you know, just if he plays well, which I think he will play well, throughout the next three games, I think Cordy's out of here. I think that they're just going to move Cordy at any cost, and then bring in a backup tackle to, you know, probably a veteran just to, you know, mentor Deion a bit in the locker room.
Yeah, definitely. You could tell Cordy Glenn was his the writing on the wall was for him too in training camp when he was seeing Dr. Andrews for injections. He was missing practices. And then again, you look at it, and Dawkins is a McDermott guy. They want their players. Cordy Glenn now has the biggest cap hit on the roster. You know that Brandon Bean wants to kind of trim that down. Glenn, as much as I like him, I don't think he's a great fit for the zone blocking scheme. I think he was better in that gap scheme where he was just able to be a mauler like his 6'6", 350-pound frame would suggest. But Dawkins, being as big as he is, he's more nimble. He can get out to the second level, and he's more what's the word for it? Dawkins is more...
Has more swag.
Has more swag. And just better technique when he's moving to the second level. Because you'd often see Cordy Glenn pulling around on them pin and pull sweeps and just get lost, where he would lose his landmark and not know where he is. Dawkins, he runs down, he looks for a player that's not wearing a jersey that he is and clobbers them. And for a rookie to do that, while holding their own in pass protection and understanding protection schemes, I think the future is bright for him.
Yeah, I most definitely agree. And, you know, I just brought him up just, I think he's pretty much already solidified that job moving forward, but I mean, this will just, you know, just be a farewell Cordy tour, and he's not even going to be involved in it.
Right. So now we have 6'8" and ugly. The Prodigy 3D.
Two great
will
names.
Will Drake be as good as he's looked recently, or do you believe the run defense will step up with the playoffs potentially on the line? You know, that remains to be seen. The defensive tackles, as I said, are horrible. I don't think Adolphus Washington or Cedric Thornton are starting caliber defensive linemen. Shaq Lawson's on IR, so you have Ryan Davis and Eddie Yarbrough rotating in there. Kyle Williams is Kyle Williams. He's a stud. Jerry Hughes has been non-existent recently, which is an issue to me. But I do think that they'll be able to shut down Drake for the simple fact that Miami's offensive line is not only banked up, but they're bad. And Matt Milano's on the field, and he has the speed to cover and play the tackle box.
Yeah, I just co-sign that. I'd like to think that they'll be able to limit him. And like you said, we're not really talking about it, but Jerry Hughes has been invisible, which is very concerning. The only time you hear his name is when he's talking to a ref, and he's getting 15-yard penalties, which is, I mean,
he does not like the elderly.
He doesn't, and that's not what I want out of my elite defensive end.
Yeah, absolutely, and it was pathetic that Patriots thing. I mean, all right, I don't want to go into that again. So what's the last question?
How far away are
the Bills? Oh, but Jerry Hughes. Right. So we got one question left.
Right.
But yeah, Jerry Hughes, I was actually I'm working on a piece of him right now. He started the season with 24 pressures, 3 sacks in the first 6 games. In the following 6 games, he had 0 sacks and 12 pressures. So his impact is pretty much non-existent. Shaq Lawson, before he went on injured reserve, was actually one of the best run defenders in the NFL, which is, some may laugh considering the Bills gave up nearly 1,000 yards on the ground in 4 games. But Jerry Hughes is not playing at the level that we expect, and he needs to come back and step up for these final 3 games if he wants to prove that he's a core player that's worthy of that contract. So for our last question, Joseph Myers asks, how far away are the Bills from completing this roster? Seems like they have a ton of holes to fill still. I looked into this with my salary cap breakdown preview piece for Bills Wire, and I don't think they're very close to completing the roster. They have the pieces in place that they signed last year in free agency and their draft class, but if you look at their free agents that they signed, they were mostly one-year deals, and they've shipped pretty much everybody that was there before Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott came to town out. So they're going to identify the type of players they want. They're going to identify the type of athletes they want, what roles they're going to fill, and build from there. And I think that this season is – you cannot come away from this season disappointed. I predicted myself that it would be no better than 4-10. I was in 4-12. I was emphatic about that. Emphatic. Anyone that would hear me, I was saying they're not winning more than 4 games. Here we are. They're 7-6, 6 seed, potentially going to the playoffs. But they are a bit away. If Tyrod's not back, they need a quarterback. They probably need a wide receiver. They're going to need to revamp the offensive line. They need 2 new defensive tackles. They need new linebackers. Tre'Davious White is the only cornerback under contract next year. Behind Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, there's nobody. So there's 35 players under contract. They're going to bring 90 to camp. So it's another, I wouldn't say rebuilding year, but another step in the building direction that the Bills are going in.
Yeah, most definitely. As for how far away we are from completing the roster, at least a few years. Just as you said, this year was just mainly a, get enough guys on the roster year. Just looking, we had a lot of roster turnover in the offseason. Had a few key guys that we got, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, who we said, yes, we want them long term. But a lot of the other guys were just like, here, be on our roster for a year. So there's going to be a lot of turnover again this year. And so all you can hope for is that we pick up another few key guys this offseason that are part of the process, as McDermott would say. Guys that he wants around long term. But I think this is going to happen for the next few years as McDermott and Bean get a few more drafts under their belt and just start to pile up their guys, per se. So, yeah, I think we're still a few years out, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be a few more years of suffering because apparently McDermott can get maybe playoff team out of a team that on paper shouldn't win more than five games. So who knows? Maybe we can reach the playoffs in one of these building years in the future.
Definitely. And I think that we as Bills fans have become so jaded to the fact that you need a complete roster from top to bottom. You need to have every position filled with a star, or at least a quality capable starter. When in reality, if you look at the best teams in the league, they have major weaknesses, but they have something that they build around. Look at the Seahawks. They have the Legion of Boom, and they had that power running game with Marshawn and Russell Wilson. The Patriots, they have Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, of course. But most of the teams, they build themselves around one core philosophy. And I think that Bills fans are just so, oh my God, this team did this. This team did that. This is how you win. This is how you that. And it's really doesn't have to be that difficult, in my opinion. But we have three more questions, if you're up for it, Kyle.
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. KD Carlson says, all right, fam, with Kyle Williams, will Kyle Williams really hang him up after this year? I don't think so after exceeding expectations this year. Also, is there any chance we trade for Luck? Oh, my God. And use the draft to focus on the front seven. D-line and linebacker leave a lot to be desired besides the GOAT, Matt Milano. I do think Kyle Williams is going to hang him up after this year. He's 35 years old. He's played for the Bills since 2005. Obviously, things haven't been that great since 2005, other than watching Kyle Williams play. But, I mean, he's a grown man with a family, and eventually you have to know when to call it quits. Obviously, we'd love to see him get a ring with the Bills, but, you know, age catches up to everybody, and the frustration of not making the playoffs and going through the cycle over and over and over again may have gotten to him. Also, is there any chance to trade for Luck? No. I don't see any scenario where you trade for Andrew Luck's broken back. But and use the draft to focus on the front seven. D-line and linebacker leave a lot to be desired. You know, personally, Kyle, that I love Maurice Hurst and I love Roquan Smith. Mm-hmm. And if they don't trade up for a quarterback, those would be two guys that I would take because I think that's number one. I think that's Kyle Williams' replacement that could be as good as Aaron Donald. And then you have Roquan Smith next to a guy like Milano, and you have a Jaguars minus Paz second level. So, what are your thoughts on that? Are we getting Andrew Luck?
Yes, we are going to trade for Andrew Luck. We're going to trade our two firsts this year for Andrew Luck. And then it's going to be – that's the process. We're going to the playoffs. But, yeah, I see
– I think Brandon Riley for Luck is – who says no?
That's also a very realistic possibility. But I see the desire to, you know, focus on the front seven this draft just because
you have to.
It's aging and it's just weak overall.
It's empty.
Exactly. So, but like I said earlier, we have the assets this year to go up. If they identify a franchise quarterback anywhere in the first round and they're like, we know, I mean, there's no such thing as a sure bet, but like we're confident that this will be the guy that we can build around, then you have to. I mean, you have the assets this year. You have to move up for it. And if that's at the, you know, if you have to focus on the defense in the later rounds, then so be it, because then you get your franchise quarterback.
Yeah, as long as it's not Mason Rudolph, I'm happy. The last question. How do you think Milano will do now that he is a starter? Everyone knows that I love Matt Milano, but I think that he's going to be fantastic. I don't think he's going to have the 17 missed tackles that Ramon Humber had. I don't think he's going to give up the 90% completion rate that Ramon Humber did in coverage. I don't think he's going to give up the 300 yards after the catch that Ramon Humber gave up. Milano, he's a converted safety. He's an athlete, and we saw kind of what Sean McDermott did in Carolina with guys like Thomas Davis and Shaq Thompson most recently and Colin Klein and guys of that body type. Just undersized guys that can fly but are physical and smart, and that's what I saw from Matt Milano at Boston College. Now everyone's on the bandwagon and making it like a joke about me liking the guy, but I think he's a quality linebacker that can start, that should have been starting. What about you? How do you feel about Matt Milano? Be careful.
He's been really good. You know, when he played in relief of Humber, and then you know, just, you know, his recent appearances, just, you know, coming in. He's obviously the most athletic linebacker we have. Well, that's not saying
much.
Because
I don't know what he's done wrong yet since
exactly.
I've been watching. I haven't seen him make a rookie mistake yet.
Exactly. And he deserves the starting job. He most definitely does. And, you know, especially because he's earned it, and he's looking like he might be a linebacker of the future for us, somebody that we can build that the linebacking core around. So, yeah, I'm all for giving him the start. And do I think he'll perform well? Yeah, like you said, he hasn't given me any reason to doubt him yet. So, sure, I think he'll perform well.
All right, so there you have it. That'll do it for this late Friday night podcast. It's 8:35. We had to get one out for you guys. Before you guys go out for the evening and enjoy your weekends before the Bills squish the fish. Thank you all for the questions. That was really fun. Hopefully we can keep doing stuff like this. Once again, I'm Rob Quinn with Kyle Salagi. Make sure you follow The Bills Wire on social media, at The Bills Wire on Twitter, The Bills Wire on Facebook. Bookmark BillsWire.com. Anything you need, we're going to have it for you. Up to the minute news, quotes, analysis, whatever you need, we've got it. We've got an awesome team. We've got Rich. We've got Kyle. We've got another Rich. We've got Joe. We've got Justin. We've got the dream team here. So really appreciate you guys' support, and go Bills.